Hey, everybody. I just want to say sorry this episode is coming out a little later than we had expected. Normally, we release every Friday. This was actually supposed to come out on Thursday, the 18th. But due to, one, a technical glitch and then just lots of activity, it's not coming out until Saturday. So here you have it. So this is originally recorded on October 18th, Thursday night. Hope you're going to enjoy it. Remind everybody, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Just go to patreon.com/RC Press today.
Well, Governor Wolf, let me tell you, between now and November 6th, you better put a catcher's mask on your face, because I'm going to stomp all over your face with golf spikes.
Oh, my God. It is Thursday, October 18th. Yes, it's a Thursday edition. Oh, my gosh. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. Golf spikes. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly, with an emphasis on the ugly this week in state and national politics. On tonight's show, Mitch McConnell blames Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid for rising deficits. Not the trillion-dollar tax cut from the GOP. No, not at all. Just like we said he would. I mean, after all, it's the very thing that Paul Ryan had signaled last year. The Young Turks turn on the spotlight on Richard Ojeda's political ads in West Virginia, representing the kind of unafraid to fight back kind of spirit that the Democrats seem all too afraid to embrace. Oh, by the way, we should be talking about the judges too as well, right, Chucky? Got some more judges on the way. What's Grassley doing right now? We'll get into that in a little bit. Forgot to put that in the notes. Story about Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist who was writing for the Washington Post. That and the one who was murdered, basically, in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. That story just gets more and more disturbing the more we learn. And, of course, Trump has to throw in with the Saudis, and he calls this another case of "You're guilty until proven innocent." Yep, throw in with the dictators and the autocrats. Well, good thing we've got, oh, Canada, oh, Canada. Yes, it's 420 24/7 as pot is legalized in the Great White North. In today's PA focus, a Coke-funded dark money lord of PA, Matt Brulietti. Who knows what nationality he wants to throw on his back this week? Well, he takes the pages of the Wall Street Journal to raise the alarm bells. He says that unions in Pennsylvania may provide the organizing needed to flip the House. Right? Of course, he's sounding the alarm bells because he's just looking for ways of raise money off that to try to destroy unions in the state. And Scott Wagner decided that self-immolation was probably the best way to go. Right? Might as well torch the campaign now. He stood there and having a kind of like pretty loud conversation with a billboard. As he said, as you heard up front, that he wanted to stomp on Wolf's face with golf spikes. Good thing nobody picked that up in the media this week. I mean, the media that was, you know, in the Congo.
Stop digest.
It's like yeah, exactly. The Tanzanian media kind of missed it this week. My God. PA GOP's messaging on socialism is so great that 52% of Pennsylvanians support some sort of socialist single-payer healthcare now. Way to go, GOP. Thanks for the assist. Alec Baldwin was in Pennsylvania Capitol this Wednesday. Not exactly. Not that Alec. No, but Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council lobbyist, swarmed the Capitol for their Convention of the States rally. And Sean, well, he bird-dogged their private meeting, which made them very, very happy. The PA 10th is still tight. Democratic challenger George Scott raised three times as much money as Scott Perry in the third quarter. Woo, man, that's tightening up. Now, 538 still has the race as lean Republican, though. We shall see. Quite an interesting race. I think the issue to watch, though, this year is the Hyperloop is coming. That's right. We can't fix our roads or bridges. Our infrastructure is crumbling. We're defunding higher education and K-12 schools, but we can have a Hyperloop. That's right. Feasibility study passed the House this week to bring an Elon Musk-esque Hyperloop between Philly and Pittsburgh. You know, so I figure, you know, once they drill underground through the shale, right, the Hyperloop doesn't actually come. I guess they could run the pipelines through it. Burn it all. Nothing burns underground in Pennsylvania. Did you know that?
I like to beg to differ on that.
And the Pennsylvania Senate leaves town without passing a bill for Catholic church abuse survivors. Yeah, they ran from that one, folks. Genuflecting on their way out, apparently. And today's last call, we didn't got a whole lot tonight. We're squeezing this one in. I've got a race for education tomorrow at my kid's school, so I'll be doing that. It's kind of taking me out for the day, so we're doing it here tonight. But, you know, can't leave without having kind of talking what's happened over at Free Will. So we'll tell you about a kind of new can release they got on this week, and I don't know, who knows, maybe we'll come up with something. Maybe I'll tell you about the Harry Potter stuff we might do this weekend. Anyways. Oh, boy. I want to remind everybody, tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. I want to remind everybody that if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches' homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. If you don't want to become a member right off the bat, no problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click on the big blue donate button in the right sidebar. You can donate whatever you can give. You know, $5, $10, $500, we'll take it all. We'll take it all. And this is a shout-out again. I know I gave a shout-out last week already to Marilyn, but Marilyn, once again, want to say thank you for becoming our most recent member at the $5 a month level. So be like Marilyn. Be like Marilyn, everybody. We got the midterms, God, like 3 weeks away, right around the corner, literally right around the corner. We need to make sure that we keep the movement, the media, and the media, and the movement. Best way to do that, become a member of Raging Chicken Press by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Yeah, so Sean, man, another wonderful week. Crazy.
Yeah. I have not gotten tired of talking about Scott Wagner since last Friday.
Oh, my God.
So I guess we'll just wait for that in the second half.
Yeah, this first segment we'll kind of go through pretty quickly because I think that the second segment is going to be something. Yeah. It's going to be something. But, you know, here's the thing. We don't have this in the show notes, but I want to put this up when we're talking about Mitch McConnell and what's here, is the fact that Chucky Schumer, his little kind of like quote-unquote deal, you know, like the one side, the deal was that we're going to give you everything you want, Senate Republicans, and you don't give us anything. We're just going to get to go on a break.
Right? And they fucked it up and they still...
Right.
Yes, and the Democrats fucked it up, and they still – who knew the Republicans were going to renege on their deal?
Yeah, so here was – okay, so let's just do just a very quick review here, right? So this is – now we've got 30 justices. Like, you know, you fool me once, right? Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Well, Chuck Schumer's going for a trifecta on this one.
Fool me 30 times.
Right, just keep on fooling me because I'm not going to pay attention. Oh, what? You did what? I thought you said something else, right? I mean, this is like – this guy is so if you recall, right, Sean and I were pretty pissed off about this last week when we find out it was last week, right? This happens. I mean, who knows? At this point, it feels like a month away. But last week when just like he did in the summer, Chuck Schumer kind of had a deal with Mitch McConnell to basically fast track the approval of 15 kind of federal judges, lifetime appointment judges. Right. And The first time it happened, people were pretty pissed off. So Chuck Schumer thought the best thing to do was do the same thing again. Right. And the whole idea, the whole excuse for this was that the Democrats, right, who were in tight races, either defending their seats or actually campaigning maybe to take over a Republican seat, could go home and campaign. But we said, right, on the show last week, say, look, there was nothing holding those Democrats back who needed to go back and campaign. Chuck Schumer and his group could have stayed put in D.C. and forced 30 hours of debate on every single nominee. But no, the apparent argument, which makes no sense because it has no bearing on reality whatsoever, they went ahead and they kind of said, no, we're going to make a deal. We'll fast track the approval of these judges and then we'll get to go home and campaign. Well, apparently, Senator Grassley, you know, of the kind of Kavanaugh hearing fame, right, the head of the judiciary, right, Grassley, no, and for that matter, McConnell, didn't seem to get the memo that the deal, quote unquote, was supposed to be that no one would be called into session, right, or would be called into committee, right, during that break up until the elections. No, because here, Grassley this week, and, you know, Mitch McConnell right there, nope. We're going to go ahead with more business, right? We're going to push some more business, and Grassley's going to throw some more through the judiciary, right? And now what the Democrats are right back where they started from, except now there are an additional 15 justices, lifetime appointments, 15 justices in the hole. So that was something else this week. So I don't know. That just that the kind of thing that just I'm just shaking my head at that.
You mean that like Republicans negotiate in good faith?
Yeah. It's like, no, it's like...
Here's a 2019 New Year's resolution.
Yeah. You would think, right? You would think. Maybe we could do that before the election. How about we have the resolution before, like, all the kind of, you know, institutions of Democratic
I'm
governance?
I'm just waiting for the lame duck session to get here.
Oh, God, it's going to be insane. It's going to be insane. And I know I would guarantee that, you know, that Schumer...
I watched them try to go after Obamacare and lame duck.
Well, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They're talking about going after Obamacare again. Right? I mean, this comes out... I mean, again, this is like textbook. And this is the,
and then Jeff Flake will stand up there and wave his hand and then still vote yes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And Susan Collins say, well, I'm going to need to think about it. And then she'll get some camera time. And then she'll go ahead and vote for it.
I support women's rights. And yes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's going to be the same dog and pony show all over again. Right? Because you remember what happened when after they passed the tax cut, like before the ink was even dry, like, you know, Trump's gigantic, like, you know, 5-year-old marker signature was dry. Paul Ryan was already saying, okay, now we got to take a look at entitlements. All right, now we gave $1 trillion tax cut. Now we can start looking at cutting entitlements. Right. And people were kind of like, oh, he's just talking. Or is that really going to happen? No. And then here we go. Right. The numbers come out about the
it's
deficit.
Been Paul Ryan's lifelong goal, mission to
this
cut entitlements.
It. Right. I mean, just like, okay, what does the Republican Party stand for at this point? Right. About elimination of all taxes to the rich, right? The gutting of the social safety net, any kind of entitlements that's there.
Right? Going back to the 19th century.
Yeah, just basically repealing the 20th century, as Rick Smith always says, right? I mean, that's exactly what they're after. They're saying everything that was gained, right, from the kind of New Deal forward, right, is what they want to take away. Voting rights. We don't need no stinking voting rights.
So the organization that was in the Capitol this week, I know we will talk about later, but it's called the Convention of the States, and it's like this ALEC funded billionaire like funded organization that wants an Article 5 convention to just rewrite the Constitution. And the guy said his mission is to like repeal the last 115 years of progressivism.
Yep, that's exactly it. That's
I
it.
Mean it's pretty much it's out in the open, it's out there.
Right. I mean, you know, if the one thing you can say about these folks, like at least they don't they're at the point where it's
lying.
Like it's all out in the open. Right. It's like, here you go. If you were fooled before, well, don't be again. That's pretty crazy. So, I mean, but this is look, people, to get smart about politics, we've got to pay attention to this kind of stuff. Right. It's like and I don't until we have like a replacement of the Democratic Party's leadership, this is not going to change because they just don't understand it. Right. So, I mean, let's just look at this. Like, so the reports came out this week that, you know, that the deficits were kind of rapidly increasing. right? People were saying at the time, right? People who were putting resistance to the Republican tax breaks, the huge, enormous trillion-dollar tax cuts, were saying to McConnell, you know, look, this is going to cause a huge spike in the deficit. And McConnell said, this is quote, right? I not only don't think it will increase the deficit, I think it will be beyond revenue neutral. McConnell said, and this is coming from the Maddow blog by Steve Bannon, right? It says, in other words, I think it will produce more than enough to fill the gap in the tax cut, right? That was McConnell in December 2017, right? Well, he sat down with Bloomberg News this week, right? And this is tells what he wants to do. And this is from Bloomberg News. Quote, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Tuesday blamed rising federal deficits and debt on a bipartisan unwillingness to contain spending on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And he said he sees little chance of major deficit reduction a deal while the Republicans control Congress and the White House. Quote, it's disappointing, but it's not a Republican problem, McConnell said in an interview with Bloomberg News when asked about rising deficits and debts. Quote, it's a bipartisan problem. Unwillingness to address the real drivers of the debt by doing anything to adjust those programs to the demographics of America in the future. Right? There you go. And we've talked about this before, is like what the Republicans do as they come in with these enormous unpaid tax cuts or wars or whatever it might be. Right? The deficit blooms. Right? Then the Democrats win the election. Right? And now they're stuck with this huge deficit. Right. And then the Republicans then blame the Democrats for the deficit that the Republicans created. And then the Republicans win that next election and they get back to cutting again. That's the dynamic. So here it is.
And I wonder what's going to happen. Sorry, I spaced out a little bit.
That's right.
But I wonder what's going to happen if the House, the Democrats win the House. Will they if Democrats win the House, they have to become a party of obstructionists.
Right. Yeah, I mean, well, or of kind of like smart strategy, right?
I mean, but no, obstruct, do nothing but obstruct and obfuscate the process. Like if they, no cuts at all, no deal making on cuts.
Totally.
No deal making on
right
tax cuts.
Absolutely.
No deal making on cuts to entitlement or Social Security or education or, you know, Pell Grants or anything like that. Just no. Just flat out vote no. You hold the power at that point.
That's right. And I guess I would strongly recommend people take a look at or take a listen to today's majority report. They had Jeff Hauser from the Center of Economic Policy and Research was on the show, and he was talking about, he just wrote this piece recently in The Hill called "Dems Can Use Subpoena Power to Reclaim the Mantle of Populism." And he runs through exactly kind of what the Democrats would need to do and why the subpoena power is so important. And he talks about it as a long-term strategy, right? He looks at, says, you know, if you look at, like, say, the Tea Party victories and that kind of stuff, these major Republican turnovers, is that they had set the stage for that kind of years ahead of time. And he's basically saying that's what Democrats got to do. Is like, look, they're not going to be able to get past the veto.
2 years of constant investigating Trump.
Not just Trump, right? But, you know,
the whole time. Nation, everyone's associated with him.
Not just them, but actually going, like, investigating things like Google and Amazon, right? Looking at these kind of corporate lords, which are kind of basically being, you know, kind of,
I know, like going after monopolies was part of their
exactly
policy agenda. Make them put it forward.
Exactly. Going after the big healthcare companies, right? Going after the big drug companies, especially in the wake of the opioid crisis, right? And so basically using it to basically set the agenda for 2020, right? And
trust, like, busting.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm telling you, that was do check it out. Jeff Hauser from Center for Economic Policy and Research. I'll try to remember to put a link in today's show notes. But I think that really gives you an example of what it means to think strategically. Right. I also think that I caught this too. I should say. Let me pull this up. Have you ever listened to the Jacobins podcast?
No.
The Dig with
I have not.
With your buddy Daniel Denver.
I have not listened to that yet. I'm not too keen on reading Jacobin.
Yeah, I know. Too many words. You got too many words, Sean.
I think Jacobin is for the Ivy Tower part of the socialist movement.
I don't agree.
where I like, or where I love reading like Indies Times and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do too. I was Jacobin. Look, I mean, look, Jacobin is like the idea is that
it's wonky.
You have to have your theoretical. You've got to have your theoretical base for any kind of movement, and so it is more. It leans more on the theoretical side. That's true, but it's more long form kind of like long form work. I mean, it's I don't know. I like it.
Anyway, I also hear they screw over their workers, but
well, we can talk about all that, like whatever. But so here, what my point was, right, is that. On the latest episode of The Dig, right? This is Jacobin's podcast, The Dig with Daniel Denver. He has Gashama Sawant, right, from the Seattle City Council, right, from Socialist Alternative. It's a really interesting interview, in part because she talks about the importance of strategy, right, and the importance of movements and the importance of electing officials within this. So it's not this kind of either or inside the outside the system, but very, very smart ways of kind of thinking about concrete political gains. So those are my two suggestions for today. Check out today's majority report and then check out the latest The Dig, the Jacobin Radio with Daniel Denver. Good stuff there. But cool. Anyway, so there's that. I don't know if you saw this. The Young Turks this week did a great put the spotlight on Richard Ojeda's political ads in West Virginia. Did you see any of those, Sean?
I have not.
Well, I just tell you, do yourself a favor, right? We don't have to go all into all the stuff right, like at this point.
I love his messaging, though. I hate it.
Oh my God! It's go check it out. Just go check out his ads and check out the segment. We'll have the link directly to the Young Turks segment on it. Because this is something that many of us have been calling for a long time, right? You've got to be willing to fight. You got to be willing to show that you're justifiably angry about what we see that's happening in the world, you know?
And did you see that, speaking about like Ojeda, yes. Something local and similar to where we're at here in Pennsylvania, Lancaster Stands Up and Jess King got another huge write-up in The Nation magazine this week.
I haven't read it. I saw it. Yeah.
Yes. It's probably a little bit less aggressive as Ojeda, but that same, same theory where you have to organize in Trump country.
Yeah.
Where John Smucker, who is one of the co-founders of Lancaster Stands Up, him and his wife, Becca Rast, she was the campaign manager for Jess King's campaign. They moved back to Pennsylvania, like right before the 2016 election. And, you know, they said, if we're going to have to do anything, we have to organize back home because some other people will. And when they mean by like other people will, not leftists or people right. on the left, they mean like conservatives will.
Exactly.
It's the type of thing you got to fight back with that messaging and stuff like that. Unabashed, progressive, populist campaign messaging.
Right. And what and Cenk Uygur's point in the review of this, he's like, look, you don't have to agree with everything that this guy stands for. Right. And he said, and he's like, and I don't. Right. And I would echo that. Right. Ojeda's kind of like, he's a really interesting character. He's got some very, very strong progressive.
A Democrat
pro-worker.
Who voted for Trump.
Right, exactly. So you've got some, he's got some complicated stuff that's going on there. He's talking about getting left behind. He's got some, there's echoes of John Fetterman in some of his, and a lot of his work. He tends to lean a little bit too heavy on the fossil fuel industry for many people's comfort. But think about for messaging and campaigning to win in a race that he shouldn't be winning, right, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So that's cool. The other thing that's been big this week, and I have to say, it's just, we think it's kind of important to highlight when we see these kind of attacks on the media and journalists that are taking place. And then the whole culture around, the freedom of the press has just been assaulted in the last couple of years. And this story about Jamal Khashoggi, Saudi journalist who's working for the Washington Post was basically about to get married and told to a Turkish woman, and basically was saying that he had to go to the consulate in Saudi in Turkey in order to get this special paperwork while he was
decapitated.
He had gone there, right, and then he was told to come back in a week. right? He goes back in a week, and at the same time he's coming back, these, you know, 15, you know, these 15 Saudi basically death squad personnel, right? People from the security forces of the Saudi Arabia, for the Crown Prince, several of the folks that work with directly with the Crown Prince, show up and go in, and what it looks like happens, they take him in. They immediately kind of attack him, torture him, and dismember him, right? And then claim that this this never happened, right? It was absolutely brutal. I just learned this morning when I was kind of listening about some latest updates that while they were, you know, bone sawing him, he was still alive, right, for 7 more minutes, right? Now, we'll see. A lot of this stuff is coming from some New York Times reporting and some reporting from Al Jazeera. And the sources are primarily the Turkish, some of the, you know, Turkish insiders or Turkish government. So we'll see all the details are as soon as they come out. But it's that the event itself is disturbing. Yes, exactly.
The response is just as bad, if not worse.
That's exactly.
I mean, like, one, everyone, like, we should not be having a relationship with Saudi Arabia at all.
Right.
And we have a lobby in D.C. for Saudi Arabia. There's a Saudi lobby that people have been talking about. People like Grimm, Greenwald, others at The Intercept, Jeremy Scahill have been critical of over the past several years. And this lobby is going back to, you know, George W. Bush and Obama catering to this lobby. No, it's a truly despotic government. They're despots.
Yep.
And the thing is, like, that I wanted to highlight was, one, Trump's contempt for these people, like the Saudi princes or Duterte and other fascistic, authoritarian strongmen throughout the world. And then also, this is also like an attack on the free press from Trump.
Absolutely.
Like, this is a flat-out attack on the free press. And, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think we should start talking about, is he going to be leaving in 2020 if he loses? Is he going to try to cancel the elections?
Yeah, look.
Look, right? I mean, everything's on the table right now.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I hate to sound like a crank or an alarmist, but, like, look at the people he's hanging out with, the people he praises, the actions he's taken with Kavanaugh and with, you know, the Saudi princes and stuff like that. And this, I mean, this is his discontent for the American media. You know, at the Trump rallies that have been happening here in Pennsylvania, you know, I've talked to people like Mysick and others who are at these presses, and it's like, you know, they're like it's worrying being at these events when he starts whipping up the crowd into a frenzy over the media.
Yep.
And here he is endorsing a murder of a journalist.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean,
all because of a $100 billion arms deal.
No, exactly. Right.
And also because of who these people are.
Right. Exactly. And apparently what's starting to come out now is that apparently he's had some longstanding business arrangements and business kind of interest there too, as well. But, you know, so, I mean, after the stuff, when the news came out and it looked like, yes, this was definitely Saudi Arabia who did this. Trump basically tweeted out that, you know, the prince, you know, Prince Mohammed bin Salman, right? He had totally denied any knowledge of what took place. So who knows? We're going to wait for all the facts to come out. But then on Tuesday, he gave an interview with the AP, right, where he kind of talked more about his perspective on this, right? And this is what he said, right? This is what Trev said. Quote, he was asked about basically, he's asked about, he says, well, I think we have to find out what happened first. You know, here we go again with, you know, you're guilty until proven innocent. I don't like that. We just went through that with Justice Kavanaugh, and he was innocent all the way. I was so unconcerned. So we have to find out what happened, and they are doing a very major investigation. So is Turkey. Plus, they're putting themselves together and doing it, and hopefully they'll get the answer as to what happened. But I will say they were very strong in their denial about themselves knowing. Right?
Yeah.
And then basically putting out some talking points and mimicking some talking points from the Crown Prince that maybe it was some rogue elements within the Saudi Arabian rogue elements in the security forces, right? And it's just unbelievable to see him time and time again, the pattern. This is what, you know, what Sarah Kendzior always writes about, the pattern of the autocrat. This is exactly what we're living with.
Yep.
So, dude, watch out. Never, never, never let your guard down when it comes to this.
Yep. Well, I know what I'm going to be planning on in the future.
Well, you know, maybe, you know, we got the great ability to take a holiday anytime you want now, right?
Yeah. I'm going to get my passport renewed. I think I might be able to move to Canada now.
Yes. Big news, right? In Canada on what? Wednesday, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Wednesday, marijuana has been officially legalized for recreational purposes. Well, this is going to be really – this is going to be – it's really going to set the tone to see what happens now, right? There's been some – you know, what's the consequence going to be, right? Is this going to be basically the domino that's going to start to pushing all the other ones to say, look, we got to get into the game simply because there's profits to be had, right? I mean, that's kind of what we're driving it.
We got 12 years left, so why not enjoy it now?
Right, exactly. 12 years left before the world burns. So, yeah, no, seriously. And it was like, it's going to be.
Might as well go down burning with it.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating. And we talked about this a while back, playing out different kinds of scenarios. And what's been interesting to see happen now is that things like Philip Morris or whatever the hell they're calling themselves now, like Big Tobacco, basically, they're looking for ways to kind of get into the game.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking, right? So pretty soon we're going to be talking about Big Pot, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how that's
still growing, though. It's a lot easier than growing tobacco.
Well, no, exactly. Right. And we'll see how this is all, how it all comes out. Will there be increasing restrictions on individuals' right to grow it? Right. Or, you know, so that basically the pharmaceuticals and big tobacco and stuff can corner the market and it becomes yet another sector of capital accumulation? Or is this going to be something that is going to keep a lot of people happy? That's what we got to know. And out of jail, right? Because that's the other part of it, right? Especially within this country. I mean, Canada has a different criminal justice system. So you don't quite have the massive expansion of the kind of the jailing of, African-American and Latinos primarily, and kind of felony convictions for possessions of small amounts of pot. That's a little different in the Canadian system, but it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens going forward.
Yeah, cool. Definitely.
And especially since Pennsylvania is like really like a stone's throw from Canada, maybe PA better get on it.
Yeah. No, I think Wolf, you know, he came out over the summer and saying he was against it. And he came out recently again saying he was against it, but it's more like a wait and see approach. He's like, we have to wait to see what other states, how they're handling it.
Yep.
And study it more, which is better than a flat out no. Because I think that some people will think, I know that some people think that this will be up for debate before he gets out of office. And it'll definitely be up when, Eugene DePasquale is the next governor of Pennsylvania.
Oh, you think that's going to happen?
I think it's going to be Eugene, yeah.
Yeah? Interesting.
I think Shapiro is going for the Senate.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut on that. I got some things to say, but I'm going to wait on it. Yeah, I just don't want to be sniping at this point. I want to end on a happy note. no, very good. So cool. So there's where we're at. We'll see what happens here in Pennsylvania. Yeah, so like I said, we'll keep it short and sweet, and we'll get into tonight's PA focus. Anything else you got in the national focus, Sean?
Nope, I am pretty good.
Yeah, me too. Other than this headache, I got to get something upstairs that's going to help me out with that in a second, but okay. All right. Well, anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back with segment two, PA Focus, right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that Paul Robeson received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP. The award was given annually to the African American with the highest achievement. Robeson certainly fit that criteria. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He attended Rutgers University, where he was an athletic standout and valedictorian. He earned his law degree from Columbia. He was a successful singer, as well as stage and film actor. He was also an internationally recognized star, with singing engagements all around the world. Robeson strongly supported labor and working people. He was also an outspoken critic of U.S. colonialism. His stand for social justice made him a target of Senator Joe McCarthy during the hysteria of the Cold War Red Scare. Because of his alleged communist ties, in 1950, Robeson's passport was revoked. It took him 8 years to get it reissued. During that time, he could not travel abroad to perform. The International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers invited Robeson to sing at their Canadian convention in 1952. Since he could not travel, he sang over the telephone. The union then organized a concert on the Washington State-Canadian border. Standing on a flatbed truck parked on the U.S. side of the border, Robeson gave a 45-minute performance to a crowd of 40,000 people. He started the concert by saying, quote, "I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and for a decent life for all men, women, and children." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
Are you ready for this? Oh, the little splatter. That was the wonderful sound of a coffee cherry cream pie IPA from Free Will. So, Sean, I mean, I don't know how you can say the word Pennsylvania this week without immediately going to golf spikes. I mean, if we look, if we were talking about a campaign that has just been a disaster and off the rails and kind of like, you know, the engines, all engines on fire in the air. I mean, this week, I mean, it was like you might as well put the heat seeking missile on yourself. Right. I mean, that's what this week was.
This is like a video of like back in the 60s with the monks that would just like pour themselves in gasoline and just like light a spark and set themselves on fire. I mean, like, okay. So being in the Capitol this week, talking about the Wagner meltdown was fucking phenomenal.
Oh, like, I could only imagine. I could only imagine.
Like, it was like, where were you when Kennedy was shot? Where were you when Wagner decided to just melt down on Facebook Live? Like, and the best thing about this, like, people are reporting like he did this like as a campaign video or as an advertisement. No, he did this on Facebook Live.
Exactly.
Like, he went on Facebook Live. Fuck it, we'll do it live. It's like,
well, you could see, look, I mean, this goes, we've talked about this before. I mean, this is Scott Wagner to a T, right?
He was unhinged.
He was unhinged. He could not even finish sentences in the midst of that Facebook Live video. He was so mad.
He has such a disdain for, like, Tom Wolf. Like, I mean, in the Capitol, right, there are people, like, for instance, like, I go to the gym in the mornings. Sometimes they're 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. And I run into Republican staffers, Senate staffers, who I will not agree with at all. Like, not one bit. And we have nothing to agree on. We like beer.
Other chuds, like, you mean? You're just basically.
No. Like, these are just people, like, just having a workout. And, like, it's still that civility. Like, okay, this is, like, what civility actually is. Like, civility is us being able to talk to each other. Hey, how's everything going? It's sort of like, it's, like, almost like that fraternity of, like, using the downstairs weight room at the Y because it's in the basement. It's, like, an old high school style, like, free weights. It's just it. Like, free weights and benches and squatting racks, and that's it.
Just guys being guys, is what you're telling me?
There is no locker room talk like what Trump talks about down there.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, hey, how's everything going? What are you even up to and stuff like that? And you see these people in the Capitol and you talk to them and, you know, you just ask them how everything's going. Like, and even though you don't agree on politics, like, that stuff is still alive. But, like, with Wagner has had such a deep-seated hatred and disdain for Tom Wolf for years now. And it boiled over.
Well, you know,
it boiled over.
Like, oh, did it ever.
It boiled over on last Friday.
Thing is, you could even see it, like, when he was saying, like, Governor Wolf, Don't you even know? You got to cover your expenses, right? And you could see that he even has trouble saying that because Wolf, of course, right? The whole narrative behind Tom Wolf, right? If you remember back when he was first running for governor, was that basically he was going to think and run for office at one point, but the economic downturn, his company
he had to buy the company back,
right? And no, so he said
his
no.
company, he sold his company to become Secretary of Revenue,
right.
And his company that he sold it to, he sold it, was going under to like a hedge fund, like a management fund or agency.
Yep.
Like it wasn't even like it was like a hedge fund almost, and he bought it back for like almost like pennies on the dollar.
Yep.
I mean, he went back to buy it back, and he brought it back to life, and then he was going to run for governor, and he decided not to, because that's when the company his dad started. Like he didn't want to see the name of that go bankrupt and out of business in central Pennsylvania.
Right, and he talked about the way that like Tom Wolf talked about his workers, right? Talked about the workers at his plant.
As human beings.
Yeah, and basically saying this is like he's going back not just like for himself, but for everyone that's been part of making that kind of that
business. And he restructured the company, he reorganized, and he gave everyone raises.
Exactly. So contrast that, of course, with Scott Wagner, who doesn't tell his workers how much he makes because he's afraid they're going to unionize when they find out how much they're getting ripped off.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, and they're both from York, right?
You also have this deep-seated narrative that Tom Wolf was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and Scott Wagner was eaten like pork roast while his dad was sacrificing and eating cracker soup with coffee poured on top of it.
That's right, man.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
Yes,
well,
exactly.
Like what Scott Wagner doesn't admit is that his uncle is Kinsley. And Kinsley owns one of the largest like property development and construction companies in like the Mid-Atlantic region. Like between York and Baltimore, he owns like one of the largest construction companies that gets federal contracts and shit like that. And you know, like Scott Wagner was also born on third base and thought he hit a triple.
Exactly.
But boy, did it bubble over on Friday.
Yeah. And so, I mean, if you were under a rock and did not see what just happened, I mean, literally, I mean, I'm actually teaching. I think I told you this before. I'm teaching a class in writing for social media, right? And one of the things that my students are doing in that class is that they're following like a politician. They get to, you know, choose whoever they want. A politician that's currently running for office for midterm elections, a for-profit company and a nonprofit company, and they're just tracking these over the course of the semester, right? And then periodically, when you get examples of kind of like, you know, really kind of solid best practices examples, someone that's doing some great work. Like I have a one kid in my class who's from Germany who's kind of bringing up this this nonprofit search engine and kind of some of the things they're doing, some really cool stuff. But then you've got this like the living example of fail, right? With Scott Wagner. I mean, everything about it. I mean, literally when some of my students had seen it, but when I was playing the thing that literally you saw their jaws like hit the table in many ways. But it's
before or after the meltdown?
This was the Facebook Live video.
Right? I know. Was it before like he actually just like went unhinged with like this golf spikes, or was this like on the lead up to that? Like
no,
the lead.
I played the whole thing, right? Because
like the lead, you can see where it's going,
right?
No. You can see it like walking that tightrope and just goes right off, and then just like he just lets it all out, like tell us how you really feel, Scott.
Yeah, no, exactly. And be sitting there, and you could see it happening, getting more and more kind of crazy. And then my favorite part was like when he turns and starts like basically yelling at the billboard itself, right in the ad. Right. I mean, it's like, we should just hear some sound from that when he turns and yells at the billboard. Right.
Das war ein Befehl! Der Angriff Steiners war ein Befehl! Wer sind Sie?
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts. But, you know, literally, so, I mean, my point of bringing up about what we did in the class is, like, you could see it wasn't just that it was, like, a fail in terms of that campaign. It went everywhere, right? It was, I mean, every news outlet in the nation, from large to small, was picking up on what Scott Wagner did.
New York Times, CBS, Politico.
Everything. I mean, it was like international news. I mean, this stuff was, I mean, unbelievable.
And like the one thing that like really pissed me off about this was how Republicans and conservatives were given an in out with this, because some people decided to use the Eric Holder line.
Oh, like, God, listen, yeah.
Like when Eric Holder said, when they go low, we kick them.
Yeah.
That's a play on when they go low, we go high, or when they go low, we punch down.
Right.
Like it's a fight back type thing. Like with Eric Holder, the rhetoric behind that, like, sure, you might be able to misconstrue the words, but the rhetoric and the way he was saying it, like he was saying it in like a puny Eric Holder type way. Like,
well, look, I mean, even like even though it just at the very baseline, right, it's like I'm not going to make like excuses for it. I mean, I'm going to say basically this. It's like it's a false equivalence. These are not
the
same
things. Oh, it's the biggest false equivalence ever.
Right. He's talking about when Eric Holder was talking about that. He was basically if you watch the entire segment. Right. One of the things that Eric Holder is pointing to is the fact that Republicans are just playing for power. Right. And that we don't have the luxury anymore to kind of like just be nice and hope for the best, because we're watching our kind of like our republic being disassembled. Right. Yes, exactly. Right. And so that the idea is like, no, we have to be prepared to get and fight for power, not kind of hope for the best. Right. Where Wagner was talking about was like,
was literally talking about beating the shit out of Scott of exactly. Tom Wolf because he hates him because of that deep seated hatred.
Exactly. And so these folks, yeah, I agree with you. It's just completely disingenuous when these people try to say, like, oh, it's just like Eric Holder. See, they both do it.
Yeah. God.
Then why, if that's the case, why did Scott Wagner take his video down, right, and then issue a kind of, like, lame-ass apology, right?
His non-apology apology?
Yeah, right. He's like, sorry, not sorry.
Because he probably took the video down because Asher and Gleason and other power brokers within the Republican Party were like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. Like, do you realize the collateral damage?
Right.
It's like you step on a landmine and it takes eight people.
Right, exactly. And like, it's a year, you're the idiot who's sitting there, who's laying the landmines for all of us to walk over, including yourself.
Right? Yeah.
Oh my God. But that was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, really, my big question right now is like, what's next? Like, what's next?
Diamond and Silk are still coming.
Oh, they're coming. What's next?
I think I want to show up to the Diamond and Silk event, like, just ripped out of my fucking mind. Because at that point, like, I don't know if they'll let me in. Like, will they just let me in for kicks? Like, dude, come on, the campaign's over. I just want to have some fun.
Dude, I do think though, when like after this election is over, I think a bunch of us should like just go and find some of the staffers from Wagner, right? Afterwards, say,
do, like,
hey, you guys,
behind
you
the
guys.
Scenes, like Friedman style, like expose.
Yeah,
like,
no, just
call
to see
off
him.
The record.
Let's no, just no, tell, just tell. Want to see him and say, guys. Thank you. Like, you just like, you like, it's like in the midst of every craziness thing that was going on, right? We needed that. Like, we, I mean, from the duck crapping all over his pants and tweeting that out to, you know, the golf spikes thing to the, you know, the going after Wolf for going to Puerto Rico. It's like, you guys, you're like, you. Thanks to you, we all made it through because it was just too fun.
Rose Strauss, Young and Naive.
Young and Naive. Rose. I mean,
so like,
on,
I think when like, okay, so like Romeo, the press person has to deal with Wagner.
Yeah.
It came from Ed Gillespie. And he was like working with Chris Christie before that. And it's sort of like a national flack that came in. A couple of the other, like, local regional directors are national flacks that came in that worked in other places. And so, like, they're going to go on and everything. But, like, Jason High, the indignant prick that worked in his office and is now – was his chief of staff. I hope he goes back into the Senate and works for some other, like, fucking lunatic senator. I'm going to be like, Jason, how are you? I haven't seen you in 6 months. Where have you been?
Oh, man.
Did you go away for a couple of years?
Yeah, right.
Man, you look like you gained 40 pounds.
Oh, man. That's crazy. Crazy, yeah. Crazy. So it's, that was the week in Wagner, man. Set yourself on fire,
I don't
fire,
know.
Man.
I don't know if they could top it.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. That's what I mean. Like, what's next, man? What's next? What are they going to do next?
I don't know. I think pulling a Bud Dwyer. Ooh.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so, well, let's get to the visit. Oh, wait. No, talk about this. Talk about the
the GOP's messaging on socialists.
Yeah, this is great. I love this. This is a great story.
So the GOP's been like going after people for being socialists and not denouncing socialism the whole season. Basically, like their whole entire thing is like they're calling socialists DSA members who support giving everyone Medicare and single payer healthcare and sending mailers and doing like these crazy fucking op-eds and like media stunts. And basically, like, their messaging is, like, what's the alternative to this? It's, like, mm-hmm. which the alternative is, like, no, you don't deserve healthcare. To, like, the socialist message, which is, like, yes, everyone deserves healthcare. And no one should go bankrupt because of medical bills. Where, yep. This is, like, the one thing that Republicans have been trying to red bait people into. Well, it turns out that 52% of Pennsylvanians support some form of socialist single-payer health care.
There you go. There you go. Keep talking about it, everybody.
Please. Keep talking about it. More free advertising.
Yeah, exactly.
Just keep on giving that. Just keep on bringing that free advertising over. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's anything more to say than that.
No, exactly. And what I love is the flip side of that, too, as well, is that 29% of Pennsylvania's strongly or somewhat opposed single payer. 29%. Right? So, you know, okay, you 30%.
Trump has a better approval rating.
Right. I'm sorry. So 30% of the 30% of Pennsylvanians will be forced to have health care. Right? Will be forced.
And the other, like, the other outline 19, we're like, yeah, whatever. I don't care.
Right, I guess exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just great. I mean, just great. I love that story. I love that story.
Just keep on, like, going after people that you...
Well, yeah. And, you know, with numbers like that, too, you can understand why Mr. Alec Baldwin, I mean, Alec, was in town.
Yes. So yesterday, Wednesday, that is, a couple of people had this fucking stupid idea. I'm sorry, Reed. But like there's some people who support an Article 5 constitutional convention, and one of the groups is the Convention of the States, really right-wing group. The Wolfpack people were there supporting a different version of that. It's a semantic debate at this point, but this Convention of the States is ran by Alec and a couple of other like right-wing billionaires, and it's pretty much like an effort to get like to amend the whole entire constitution and just get their checklist through.
Right.
And you have to really look into it. But, you know, I was talking to Marco Scorfolo. He's like, yeah, what's this whole thing about? I was like, they just want to open up the constitution and just implement their whole entire checklist. And Scorfolo looked at it and was like, man, that's a really cynical approach for things. I like that. This is the AP reporter. And so afterwards, these people had a meeting in the GOP caucus room, the Senate caucus room.
Interesting.
But the GOP Senate caucus room was being occupied.
It's a coincidence.
Was being occupied by the GOP Senate caucus because of the child abuse stuff, because it was the last day of the session. And they had like 50 bills to vote on. They had a votorama on like Tuesday that ended at 11 o'clock or Wednesday at 11 o'clock. So there was a sign that ALEC meeting being switched to 14E.
And let me guess, you looked at that and you were like,
Yes. Well, man.
That sounds interesting.
So, like, I knew what that was, and a couple of other writers knew what that was. So, like, we actually staked it out. I was the only one who stayed until people showed up, but there was a couple of us there. Roxbury left, and the one lady from the Pennsylvania legislative PLS left, and I was the last one standing because they were like 10 minutes late. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just standing there with my cell phone, and as they're coming, I just go, boop, put my camera on, and I'm just panning as they're walking in the door, close it out. And I get the biggest shit-eating stare from one of these people.
And you're just like, hello.
So you see people walking in and out, and I have other videos on my phone of me like just going like that at the door, like having my phone pointing at the door, and the guy's just staring at me every time the door opens.
It's awesome.
Like there's this guy just, and so like the meeting ended up getting canceled. I would like to think it was because of me. And so as the guy's coming out the door, one person who is Mark Meckler, who is like the founder of the Tea Party Patriots. Totally grassroots.
Totally.
Yeah, totally grassroots.
Totally.
It had nothing to do with AFP or Alec.
Nothing at all.
Nope. Like, all that stuff was fake,
power
fake
the
news.
People.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so I go, is this about the Alec meeting? He looked at me, Alec Baldwin? I'm like, no, American Legislative Exchange Council, sir. He's just like, I don't know what you're talking
hamana,
about.
Hamana.
Like, this room was in the hallway. It's like this room was like in the hallway of a hallway. Like you literally had to go in, going down towards, if you're in the Capitol, you have to go like a hallway behind the escalator in the East Wing to get to the media room, right? Mm-hmm. In the Airbus building and stuff like that. They have a hallway that juts out and down in like a rectangle that like shoots out of like that area. And that's where the conference room was. So it was literally like in this like drywalled hallway.
So they're basically they were sitting there going like, we're gonna have the meeting over there because it's like an Escher Peyton, Manning. Nobody will ever know where we are.
Like, so
damn, there's kitchen.
So no, like I was no, the actual legislators didn't show up. A couple right. of staffers did, and I was just filming.
Oh,
them
I'm
as
sure
they
that they were
in.
Texted. I'm sure that they were texted. Basically, like, probably not a good idea. You come down here.
Yeah. So. They canceled, and the guy followed them right outside the. Well, before that, I actually went to the help desk. I was like, I'm looking for 14E. Like, I've been in this building for like 5 years now, and I can't find this room. The lady's like, you're going to have to go down to that hallway, and there's going to be a hallway over there, and go down that hallway, and it'll be on the left hand side.
I love it.
So I followed them out. I followed them up the escalator. And then they split apart, and I followed the two staffers. I'm like, excuse me, you said you didn't know what that meeting was, but there's the signs right there on the caucus doors that said the Alec meeting's going on. Do you know what that's talking about? Because that's where you just were.
They're just saying to themselves, keep looking straight ahead, keep on walking. Just keep on walking, pay no attention. Pretend you can't hear him.
Yeah. And I was saying, I was like 20 feet away from them, so I was kind of like yelling it down. Like,
of course you were. Oh my God.
So that was fun. I put a thread up on my Twitter account with that.
Yeah.
I highly advise watching the videos if you want.
Yeah.
So if you want to laugh at
this
it.
This is a good one for a late Thursday night, folks. So it definitely is. Definitely is. That's crazy. That is great. That's fun. Yeah, and so I'm just curious about this because I know you've been following this race for a while with George Scott and Scott Perry, and it's surprisingly tight. Surprisingly tight. I mean, it's surprising not to you. I mean, I know that you've been kind of focused on this for a while, but I don't think people expected it to be this tight. You know, 538 is still looking at this as something that a race that leans Republican. But if you recall, like way back when, this was like, you know, the common sense wisdom about this was like, there's no way anybody's going to beat Scott Perry in this district.
Yeah. And then redistricting happened, and it's still a really tight race.
Yep.
But George Scott's a likable pastor. I went to a fundraiser tonight, rubbing elbows with people. I went to a fundraiser for the Scott campaign and gave him some money.
Oh, I just seem to hear the top. Oh.
But no, yeah. No, I mean, like, but the one of the things, like, it's not, I went to, you go to a couple of these fundraisers, like we went to the Sarah and the Murado one mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You'll get right. like 20 or 30 people out. There were like 200 people out tonight at this fundraiser.
Well, it just goes to show you, right? When you've got when you run and you run hard and you run to win, is that it has a momentum to it, right? And I think that you could, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, visceral. You can feel it.
Yeah. I know a couple of the speakers at this fundraiser tonight were Ed Rendell and Bob Casey. Shook hands with Bob Casey. He passed the handshake test.
He passed the handshake test?
Yes, like he actually has a firm, tight handshake.
No, that's so
good. Which is something I look for in people.
That matters to me so much. Let me tell you how much that matters to me. Wait. Let's just sit here for a minute and just like, let me just think for a minute about how much I care.
I know. Not little. Not much.
Do.
But
not a bit for 400, Alex.
So Rendell is speaking, and Rendell was like, you know, making like gestures, like, oh well, you know, it was really surreal, like where he's like, this race falls down on you, the people signing the checks, and but
Rendell for you.
But he was also like explaining, like, you know, Connor Lamb won by 700 votes in the district that had 200,000 people come out for a special election. Yeah. He's like, this is on you, and not just like you, the people like signing the checks, but the people knocking on doors, phone banking. Cory Booker's going to be making phone calls for George Scott, like as a robocall. You know, Rendell's recruiting people. They're really going hard with this race. National money's coming into it. They really wanted to flip this seat.
Yeah.
And I think they can.
Look, and I think it's smart. Like I am no fan of Ed Rendell, right? At all. But that guy is like,
you have to give it to him. He's good at what he does.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that guy's one of the best politicians I've ever seen. And the thing is that he knows how to use, like, he knows how to get in people's face and still be likable with it, how to actually put pressure and shame on people. I mean, how to actually kind of like really
pull the levers and make sure he gets
every single lever. I mean, he's like, he's got some major skills. It's smart to have him there.
No, I know he showed up. A lot of people still like him. But no, I mean, Casey gave a good speech. I mean, he was fired up. I mean, like he actually raised decibels to like a few levels.
I'm telling you, I mean, the guy who he was like, you know, the guy who's, you know, the crypt keeper there for a long time. Right? So, but holy, you know, but like, you know, we've said on this show, I mean, credit where credit is due. I mean, Casey has been pretty stand up on many, many issues of late, especially since the 2016 election. So,
yeah. And one of the things he said, most important things I think he said at the Casey short speech tonight, basically that, you know, their corporate donors are coming for us. At this point, I mean, he called out the Republican donors by hand. It's like, listen, I mean, the people in this room tonight, yes, a bunch of them were like the elitist class that, you know, from the area. Like, that's just going to happen. But many Tuesdays with Toomey people showed up tonight.
Yeah.
Retirees, like every person from the Tuesday with Toomey crowd that I know showed up tonight.
Look, this is the difference between what's been happening on the left. I mean, we've talked about this before again. I mean, I feel we're going over old terrain. But the fact is that, you know, there's an attention to actual practical politics in addition to movement building. And like, so Tuesday with Toomey people, like, it's not just like, okay, yeah, this is all we care about is kind of like, you know, showing up at these fundraisers. These are movement people, but they recognize the stakes. And that is, I'm telling you, it has been such a huge and significant difference and shift on the left that, I mean, I've never seen in my lifetime, to be frank with you.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it was also you hear some of the stories happen over the summer. You know, Lindsay Williams, Emily Skopoff had some fundraisers out in Pittsburgh. Events that would normally bring like 10 people in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so I remember going to a Dale and Leach House fundraiser back in 2014. I know. And the person who hosted it feels the same way.
Yes.
Literally like 15 people showed up to like Dale Leach's fundraiser. Like, but like he was that progressive running in that race. That's normally like the type of crowds that show up to these events. Events where they bring out 15, 20 people have been bringing out like 150 people.
Yeah. Unreal.
We were at the Firehouse tonight. You remember the being at the firehouse getting lunch with Rick? Upstairs, third floor is just as big, if not.
I remember it well.
But no, I mean, like, there were 150, 200 people there tonight for this event.
That's amazing.
I would say he easily raised $30,000, $40,000 in this one event. I would not be surprised.
Hats off, man.
There have been some big money people in the area there tonight within the Democratic establishment. I would not be surprised if he raised $30,000, $40,000.
Well, look at that. Like I said, like we said at the top of the show, is like, you know, he tripled the amount of money raised in the third quarter. And
that's what happens when you bring Ed Rendell out to these events. That's what happens when you bring Bob Casey to speak.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, it's like based upon the campaign that he's been running too. I mean, they've been putting money in the right places too as well. I just hope that that this last push, they're going to put the money in the door knocking, and they're going to get people kind of out there.
Am I signed up for a shift?
Yeah, see that? See, Sean's even like he's part of the machine now. Like, not only is he rubbing elbows like on the insiders of all this kind of stuff with Ed Rendell and Bob Casey's very firm handshake, but now he's also kind of one of the canvassers. So that's pretty cool.
I mean, like, it kind of like force you to do. You have your name, phone number, and then check boxes. Which day are you available to volunteer?
To get inside, they actually have to chip you. It's a GPS tracker that eventually dissolves on its own, like stitches. But
no, I mean, it was interesting going to this. I mean, I'm not like
It releases endorphins every time you say Clinton or Obama.
So when I interned out here in Harrisburg,
like
part of my duties with AppScuff was going to these fundraisers.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like something that I'm used to going to.
Yeah.
I'm not like totally out of place. I showed up in jeans and a flannel. Semi street clothes.
No, man, I'm like I said to you before, man, kudos to you, man, because I do not have those skills. Right? Those environments just make me like, I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? Right? Unless I'm like with people that I know that I can sit around and talk to. Like, I recognize we've had to, some of these things for AbScuff when we go out and, different kinds of fundraisers that it will be. When I'm out there for assembly or something like that in the past, to go to. But I'm like, I'm with like two or three other people that like
just stand in the back drinking.
I'll just stand with you guys and just kind of like hang out. I'm like, I don't want a picture with that person. I'm not going to sit there and pretend that I'm going to like, have something interesting to say to you and you're going to nod politely at me. I'm like, oh, I'll make a clever comment. I'm not going to do it.
See, I bounced around, knew a bunch of people in there already. So I just bounce around talking to them and say how they've been going.
Like Tigger. You're like Tigger.
Yeah. Work in the room.
Work in the room. That's right, everybody. Work in the room. No, very cool stuff, man. Very cool stuff.
I know. Yeah. I mean, like, I've given to this session, this election year, Ocasio-Cortez, Randy Bryce, Sarah Summer, and Fiedler. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, look, this is the first year I've actually given donations to candidates and organizations.
Yep. Pretty amazing, man.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
You know what else is amazing?
Please do tell.
We're getting the Hyperloop.
The Hyperloop. Elon Musk is coming to PA. We're going to dig right through that shale. We're going to produce, the pneumatic tube things that they have at the bank. We're going to do it all the way from Philly to Pittsburgh. It's going to be the Hyperloop, everybody. And it's going to be insane.
This is the biggest fucking piece of grift possible. Like, okay, so they're going to be paying someone for a feasibility study to tell them that this is probably going to cost like how many hundreds of billions of dollars? I think a trillion.
Yep.
Like.
Now, look, let's just say, okay, look. So let's start with this. If we're going to be fair here, right? If this kind of system were ever built, right, it would be highly efficient, right?
It would be privatized.
No. Let's be kind here for a second, right? If it were ever built, it would be more efficient, right? In part because of the way that it runs and how it uses these kind of magnets, blah blah blah, blah, right? It would be super fast, like they come up to like 700 miles an hour, right? It would definitely decrease transportation times and all that kind of stuff. Now, that being said, let's just go right back to the person who first decided that they were going to do this, Elon Musk. Okay, Elon Musk, right? When they came up with the idea for the Hyperloop, right? They did
interviews. Was probably smoking pot.
Well, yeah, totally. He's like, they were sitting there, and they, you know, he did this interview. I read this interview with him. Like, he's talking about, he's like, yeah, to be honest, is like, when we first came over the Hyperloop, we did it as kind of a joke, right? And so they did a web page with it and did all this other kind of stuff around it. And he said, then people got kind of really interested in it. And we're like, yeah, all right, we'll build it. You know, it's kind of like, whatever, right? And there's all sorts of problems with it, right?
The cost.
Well, the cost is one of them. You know, people may have seen this as they've got the Boring Machine, which is, this is a division of like SpaceX and stuff, where it's actually this kind of, it just builds the tunnel, right? Just kind of drills the tunnel and lays down these tracks and stuff. And they have a 1 mile or 1 mile plus section of this down by, you know, Los Angeles, you know, by the San Andreas Fault, right? They have that going on there. And, you know, some of this may actually happen. There's been all sorts of discussions, but it's like, it's one of these, like, these hot new things that multiple states are kind of getting on board. When I saw this in Pennsylvania and I was looking for some background for this, I was shocked by the number of states that are also doing feasibility studies, right? And, you know, again, frankly, to be honest with you, I think a lot of it comes out of a sense of absolute desperation, right? That we need something that's going to turn it around, and this big shiny object is what's going to do it.
I think what we should do is just fund the public transportation system we already have, but that just sounds too fucking
about
difficult.
That. No, it's too, Sean, it's too old. It's not as interesting. Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. It's like those dynamic brain memes.
Wait a minute.
Like,
whoa, you mean like we take the tracks that are already there, we fix them, and we use them? Whoa, dude. Right? I mean, that's exactly it.
So,
I mean, I live in Perkasie, right? We've got train tracks that run right through our town. Right, Perkasie, Sellersville, right, all the way through Quakertown and Lehigh Valley. There's existing train tracks there that actually get used on rare occasions at this point. Right, what would it look like to invest in that kind of infrastructure? Right,
light rail.
Allentown, Reading. Well, come on. I mean, you know what I'm
Allentown,
saying?
Allentown, between like Reading and Easton.
Totally. Right, and again, the tracks are, I mean, already there. So it's like, you know, like this Hyperloop stuff, like, yeah, sure. I mean, you know me. I mean, I'm a sci-fi guy, right? I mean, it's kind of tantalizing.
Sci-fi is now reality.
Well, exactly. I mean, like, I think it's more worthwhile talking about kind of like, you know, going to the moon than it is kind of building the Hyperloop system. I mean, this is just pure kind of like second-rate fantasy stuff. And, you know, and there's, but I guarantee
you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I actually want to thank Stephen Bloom, who's going to be the incoming vice president of the Commonwealth Foundation, for voting against this.
He did? Are you kidding
yes.
me?
No, I am not.
Even so Stephen Bloom can see that this is just insane.
So Bloom, so these are the Republicans that voted against this. All of them. Bloom, Russ Diamond. Russ is actually a cool person. He's nice. Dunbar, Dush, the person who wanted to impeach the Supreme Court justices. Irvin, I don't know who that is. Kiefer, don't know who that is. Schmel, he's out in like the western suburbs of Philadelphia, Chester County. Ryan, don't know who that is. Brad Rowe, who hates Apscoff.
Yeah, Brad Rowe, yeah. And who's an all-around horrible person.
Yes. Kathy Rapp, saying. Another all-around horrible person. Mm-hmm. Nelson, don't know who that is. Darrell Metcalf, yeah.
Oh, wait. We can't let that pass go without
Daryl Metcalf.
There you go.
Mar, I'm surprised Mar voted against it because he has a DUI. I nailed him for a DUI last year, and it's the reason why he's retiring.
Oops.
Walsh, I don't know who that is, and Ward. That's it. All the Democrats like voted for this. Like, come on now. I would have voted no. I would have stood up on the floor, and I would have gave a speech. Like, and all he would say is, "This is fucking stupid. Vote against it."
Right. This is
and
like,
you probably have another 20 votes.
No, I'm telling you, this is what you know. The new chancellor of Apscoff, right, comes out of Silicon Valley, right? He's basically a Microsoft dude, right? He worked for the Gates Foundation. And it's like, I think that this is exactly the Democratic Party has got to break its kind of like, you know, starry-eyed kind of like glow every time it sees kind of like high technology in Silicon Valley. When it sees those two things together, they're all like, where do I put my money, right? I mean, please, how can I help? Maybe, could you bring some more low-wage jobs to our state, please?
Yeah. So,
but anyways, yep. Hyperloop, everybody. Hyperloop. I'm gonna do a T-shirt, Sean. Okay, that's gonna be like one of our early
chicken Hyperloop.
Totally.
Raging Hyperloop Press.
Yes, it's gonna be the Hyperloop, man. We're gonna do the Hyperloop T-shirts. So look for those pretty soon.
I'll put like, what this is gonna do? This is gonna be a study. It's commissioned to the Turnpike. That then we'll get commissioned to some fucking consultant. It'll be a waste of money because we already know this is a waste of money. It's never gonna happen. But some consultant agency is going to get millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars for doing this study.
No, exactly. Exactly.
But this is like the best part about this.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So there we go. So last up to wrap up our Pennsylvania focus. Once again, the Pennsylvania Senate decides, you know, we're not going to leave town until we do the right thing.
Is that a joke?
Yes, it is.
So yesterday the Senate Republicans left Catholic Church abuse survivors hanging. They skipped town and left. And Scarnati wanted to know why he was left hanging, because the governor, the House Majority Leader, the House Speaker, House Minority Leader, and the Attorney General didn't want to compromise on his bill that would protect the Catholic Church. Someone needs some introspection.
So, you know, you've got one of the kind of worst scandals and abuse one of the worst things ever. Let's just put it this way, right? That happens.
And you got one guy standing up for this institution that committed one of these worst things ever.
And here you go. Here you go. There's a lot more I want to say right now, but my daughter just snuck up right next to me. And so Scout has come out here. So I'm just going to leave it at that for now. And then when we get back to our regular Friday schedule, we'll have a little bit more in-depth conversation about this. Right, Scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great. All right. Well, this is... always another happy place to leave on. PAGOP doing the right thing. Not right. It's kind of disgusting, actually, to be honest with you. It's really freaking disgusting. So,
yeah.
All right, man. This will be the end of part two. All right. So when we come back, we're going to do a really quick last call today. Maybe have some beer updates. Maybe here's, I don't know, some rando thoughts that are going through our heads. But I want to remind everybody, the best way that you can support this podcast, the best way you can support homegrown progressive media right here, is to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.com, click the donate button there, or you can go to Patreon.com/RCPress, become a member for as little as $5 a month. We'll be coming back very quickly right after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/RCPress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/RCPress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It is the last call. And I have to say, today's last call is being aided greatly by this coffee cherry cream pie cream ale brewed with coffee beans, cherries, vanilla, and milk sugar from Free Will Brewing. I just found out right towards the end of our second segment that my dog threw up upstairs. Yep. My dog threw up upstairs, right? And, of course, was recording at nighttime. Usually he's actually sitting next to me here on the floor, but whatever. I could go on and on. But so that's what we have.
I yesterday went to Whiskey Wednesday for the first time.
Did you now? Where is Whiskey Wednesday? Whiskey Wednesday.
So it's a bar called Stocks on Second. Bunch of high-end whiskeys. Their whole entire like whiskey, Irish whiskey stouts. Irish whiskey, scotches, bourbons, and ryes, and regular whiskeys are half off during happy hour.
That doesn't stink.
Shots. So, like, shots of it. So, a shot of, like, a Thistle Finch.
Yep.
Or Whistle Pig, I mean. A shot of Whistle Pig will be, like, $8 instead of $16.
Nice.
So, I had a couple
of...
You
have a favorite?
It was happy hour, so I only had a couple of old fashions. One with Basil Hayden. And the other one with Templeton Rye. Both really good.
I don't think I've ever had either one of those.
They're good. They were really good.
Have I asked you before, have you had Lafrague?
I have not.
You got to try Lafrague sometime.
Okay.
I'm not going to say that you're going to love it. Right. But it is my firm belief. My friend Rich, who actually teaches out at Shippensburg, he found this great little, it's called the Circle Bar out in Oxford, Ohio, when we were out in grad school. And the Circle Bar, the guy who was, you know, owned the bar and kind of ran the bartender stuff would go to Scotland every year and go kind of tour the different distilleries and stuff and come back with a bunch of stuff. And Rich kind of, you know, Rich is like this. He's a likable person, unlike me, right? So he goes out and he kind of struck up friends with them. And then one day he asked me if I wanted to go there. And I said, I don't even know where this place is. And it's kind of like down this alleyway and you got to get into it. And he introduced me to Lafrague. And Lafrague is basically... it's as peaty as you can imagine, right?
Yes.
It tastes like you're drinking smoke.
So I want to get I've been drinking Dewars lately. Mm-hmm. And I've been drinking some Jameson. Jameson.
Jameson's my favorite, yeah.
I mean, so like the Dewars and Jameson are very like mild on the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Like compared to like a bourbon or a rye. Right. It's like very... But one of the ones I want to try is Lagavulin.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I've never had it. I know what it is.
It's so like McGrath's has it in bottles. It's like $14 a shot at happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's an Isle Scotch. It's supposed to be really smoky and peaty.
Yep.
But it's just like I don't ever want to drop like $14 on a shot of whiskey.
No, totally. But you know, we'll take that one. But definitely try Lafrague because I think like you know we had my neighbor's from Scotland and he does like a the party every year for Robbie Burns, right? The poet, Scottish poet. Going to get together. We have the haggis and all this kind of stuff. And we are doing kind of testing of it. And there was a new initiative, a new initiate into the whiskey world. And so we kind of set up and I was like, okay, yeah, let's put Lafrague on this side. And I can't remember what we had. I think, I'm just not remembering what we had on the other side, but you kind of see the continuum of different whiskeys. And Lafrague is great as a kind of like a baseline on the super, super peaty, smoky stuff. So definitely check it out. There's this definitely other one that I don't know what it is. And I used to think it was Lafrague, but it's not. But there's another one. Someday I'm going to have to find out what it is. It's a black whiskey, a black scotch. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I remember it being really deep and interesting, but I've lost what it was. So, anyways.
Yeah.
Well, I got my, like I said, I think I talked about this last week, the coffee cherry cream pie release from Free Will. It's definitely really good. It's an interesting taste. It's not, I wouldn't say it's the kind of stuff that I'd want to be having all the time. It's a really cool, almost like, I don't know, desserty, right? Well, I guess, yeah, with that name, kind of beer. So it's just, you know, it's kind of nice, interesting kind of beer, which is really awesome. Definitely recommend that. Free Will this week was supposed to come out with its Pineapple Rant. release. However, they're postponing it. From what I can gather, is basically they had the stuff ready and they were starting to can it, and it wasn't taking in the way that they had. It just was not coming out. So they decided, you know what, we're not going to put this out unless we want it. So they're postponing it. They're going to redo some stuff until they get it the way they want it. But this weekend instead, they are going to have a beer called Race Against Time. It is an orange creamsicle inspired IPA, and it will be there starting at 12 o'clock on Saturday if you want to pick some of that stuff up too as well. So definitely check that out on Free Will. So anything else you got going on, Sean?
No, that's it.
Have you ever been to, I've got to ask you this, you ever been to the Harry Potter festival thing down in Chestnut Hill?
I have not. So I have never read any of the Harry Potter books.
Oh, that's okay. We'll keep that shame between the two of us. But
or seen any of the movies.
Here we go. Oh, we got to talk about one more thing after I say this. So it's actually really, I mean, it's a really good series. I mean, it's like, it's really good. My kids love it. You know, it's actually, you watch what's with my son. He's blown through those books. Like, it's unbelievable. He's engaged. I mean, you know, he's in fourth grade now. He had read all the Harry Potter books by the end of third grade. I was never that kind of reader at that point. So it's kind of really, really cool. But Chestnut Hill down in Philadelphia was, you know, has all these old buildings. They used to have this Harry Potter Fest. But now, like, who owns the Harry Potter thing? Is it Universal or something? Uh-huh. But they basically were threatening to sue Chestnut Hill if they use the Harry Potter name. So they're not doing that. They can't have the Harry Potter Fest anymore. So now they're calling it, like, Wizards and Wands or something like this. So we might go check that out. One of my son's
friends. Superb
friend.
Owl.
What's that?
The Superb Owl.
Superb Owl?
Okay, never mind. I was just trying to make a joke. From Colbert. He had a whole entire skit on, if you use the word Super Bowl in a
right, exactly.
Yes, you would get sued.
Right, so you can't use it. So, yes, same, exactly. So, anyways, you might do that this weekend. So, okay, so here's what I've got to talk to you about, which I forgot last week, but here. So, I'm almost through the first season of Ozark. Right? And so I've got a question for you about this now. So now I'm deep enough into the series. So when you first asked me if I had ever watched that and recommended it, why did you want me to watch it? Or why did you think, or what are you interested in about that show?
I think it's just a good TV show. I think it's a really good TV show. And it has a good plot line to it. Why?
So what it's just the plot. Just it's a good show.
Because of the drugs?
I like it. No, because here's the thing, right? So, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this, right? And I'm going to, you know, commit to it. And it's, I don't know if you had this sense of it or not, but it's the kind of show that you kind of got to commit to. You got to commit to kind of going, getting
It's not a fast show. It's slower to move out.
Yeah. And so I sat there, you know, and I'm like, you know, I trust your judgment enough. So I'm sitting there like, I mean, unlike you when I suggest things for you, but that's a whole other story. I trust your judgment enough. So I'm like, no, there's something to this. So I'm going to stick with it. Not that I didn't like it. Like for the first couple episodes, it wasn't that I didn't like it. It was just kind of like.
It's slow and mundane.
Yeah. And I kind of liked it. I actually liked that. Right. I actually liked that kind of thing. But it was like saying. I got to the point, like the third episode and the fourth episode, and I'm like, okay, you know, what's going to happen with the narrative, right? Are they going to do something that's really cheesy and there's this kind of like, you know, turn and it goes dun, 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 but it's not like that. And but you remember the episode, right, where they do I don't want to spoil it for people because I want to recommend this. I want to recommend people check out Ozark. It's a really cool show. But the episode where they basically fill in the backstories, like there's a bunch of flashbacks and everything.
Yes.
That's like the freaking turning point of the series. Right.
Because it glues everything together.
Yep. And yes, it happens. Yes. And it's so well done. And you get to that point.
And it's like late in the season, too.
Yeah.
It's like seven episodes in.
Exactly. That's what was so interesting about it, right? Because it's late in the season and that you've had to kind of like make a leap of faith to get to that point in the season. And then it's a payoff, but it's not the kind of payoff that's like, you know, the big splash. It's just the way that kind of like things start to seep in and make sense. It's a really freaking cool show.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's you learn why he's still sticking around.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it gets really complicated, like with his, you know, what assumptions that you make about the family, right? About he and his wife, right? That changes after that.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of cool stuff. So I don't want to spoil the plot for everybody, but it's definitely a cool show.
The second season is like, to me, after you get past this one, the second season, it's a lot faster.
Yeah. I'm expecting that. I could see that coming now.
And there's the roles start changing.
Dun, dun, dun. Sean Kitchen leaves it at that.
Yeah, the roles of the characters start to change, and it's one of the reasons why I like Peaky Blinders. Another thing I recommend you watch.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, the women have a lot to do with the series, and they make it.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it there.
There you go. So Ozark recommendation, drink it with your favorite scotch or your favorite freewheel beer. I don't know. Let's see what you got. All right. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
That's it.
All right. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for sticking with us. I know we're coming at you a little early. This is probably, we'll see if it gets out either late tonight on Thursday, but it might not show up in your feeds until early on Friday morning. I wish you the best of the weekends. As we kind of inch ever closer to Halloween and, of course, the midterms. So keep it real, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back next week, I think, at our regular scheduled time. Until then, everybody, keep up the fight. See ya!
Well, Governor Wolf, let me tell you, between now and November 6th, you better put a catcher's mask on your face, because I'm going to stomp all over your face with golf spikes.
Never gets old.
God bless mixed metaphors.